Thank you for joining us once again for That Which Cannot Be Destroyed. Today we are reading through the introduction of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's book, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. Hope you enjoy. All right, thank you for joining us once again. It's me, it's Mark. I'm back. And I have with me the beautiful, the lovely Kathleen.
Hello.
How are you doing today, Kathleen?
I'm doing good. I'm cold and I'm good.
Cold, but you're good. So we're going to be talking about this book called Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. And it's by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who I heard about this book and about Chogyam Trungpa from a podcast with Duncan Trussell. Every once in a while, Duncan, he's a comedian, he'll bring this book up. So I was interested in it. He made it sound really interesting, so I read it. And I found it to be, filled with just these universal ways of thinking and of living and of universal ways of life and how to see spirituality. And it has to do with spiritual materialism. So we'll get into what that means maybe in a little bit later. So what do you think so far? Are you ready to say Chogyam Trungpa's name three times fast?
Like, Chogyam Trungpa.
Good job, man. You already got it.
It's kind of a strange name, isn't it?
Yeah. So it says that he was born in 1940 and died in 1987. Meditation master, scholar, and artist. He was the founder and president of the Vajradhatu Naropa University and Shambhala Training. His other books include Shambhala, The Sacred Path of the Warrior, and Great Eastern Sun, The Wisdom of Shambhala.
Wow.
So have you heard of any of this stuff before?
No.
No?
I don't think so. I probably have, but I'm not sure.
Well, this book, I think it was put together based on some of these talks that he would give. He would give these live talks to like a group of people at a convention or a retreat or something. Hmm. It says that it's a series of talks given in Boulder, Colorado in the fall of 1970 and the spring of 1971. Let's see. There are numerous side tracks which lead to a distorted, ego-centered version of spirituality. We can deceive ourselves into thinking we are developing spiritually when instead we are strengthening our egocentricity through spiritual techniques. This fundamental distortion may be referred to as spiritual materialism. Hmm. So that's where the title comes from.
That's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, so I mean, we've all come across this and we've probably all done this at some point, right? Like we think that we're practicing some type of spirituality, but it's really, it's like ego-centered, right?
Yeah, kind of like flexing our spiritual self, like to the world in that sense.
And we are more spiritual than someone else, right? Or growing up, it was like the churches we were going to, right? Like the church we went to, of course, had the better knowledge, like a better understanding of the Bible than the church across the street.
Yeah.
So people, that's like, of course, a very simplistic form, but this book gets into like really complex ways that we can lie to ourselves and pretend that it's, our egocentricity is actually spirituality.
That's interesting.
So I'm just reading from the introduction. Maybe we can do like a series on this book, huh? And like go through the chapters and just focus on each thing. So we are in the introduction right now, and I'm gonna just pick different pieces from there to read out of. According to the Buddhist tradition, the spiritual path is the process of cutting through our confusion, of uncovering the awakened state of mind, when the awakened state of mind is crowded in by ego and its attendant paranoia, it takes on the character of an underlying instinct. So it is not a matter of building up the awakened state of mind, but rather of burning out the confusions which obstruct it. In the process of burning out these confusions, we discover enlightenment. Have you ever felt like you have experienced enlightenment at all?
I was born enlightened.
Yeah, me too.
No, that's a good question.
I've always felt more enlightened than you, though. Just kidding. That's an example of spiritual materialism.
I don't know. I think sometimes when I learn something new, I can get to kind of a feeling of a state of enlightenment.
Yeah.
In that sense. But we're talking about like spiritual enlightenment, right?
Yeah. I guess it would be like what they're saying here, an awakened state of mind would be the enlightenment.
Well, yeah, I think just navigating this world and all the different religions and spiritual selves, you know, I've kind of like navigated the world through my spirituality and kind of adapted to what was around me as, like, I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, with my experiences, I would encounter different spiritual beings that practice different faiths, and I would just kind of navigate through those different faiths and adopt some of the stuff and then let go of other beliefs. And I feel like through all of that process, I became awakened in the sense of not needing to just link myself to one specific frame of mind.
Right.
And through that process, I would consider that an awakening.
By listening to the different traditions.
Yeah, and kind of being able to look through those different lenses.
Mm-hmm.
But also understand that there's things that you can collect from each one that might help your life, but then not have to be structured in just one way of life.
The having the structure for just one way felt wrong, right? It felt off to us.
Numbing.
Because the very nature of spirituality, we can't really box it in. You know, there's not really a format to it. So we see people living in like one way, and it kind of strikes us as being incorrect.
Yeah.
In a way, to stay in one path and then to kind of think that you are the righteous one and everyone else's version is off.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like moving like water through each receptacle of whatever that spirituality is, right?
Exactly.
Being poured into that receptacle and then poured out of it.
Yeah.
And flowing and finding other water, you know, connecting with other water and other spiritual pathways. Do you think that's because we're inconsistent people?
Maybe we adapt to things maybe more easily than others, but then we're also very rebellious.
Yeah.
So we adapt, yet we rebel. And
right.
I don't think that it's because we're inconsistent. I think we just are interested. We have questioning minds, and so we want to question. Question everything, and we want to learn more.
And when somebody has kind of an absolute answer, we know that it's not right.
Right.
We know that there's going to be something off about that. Because we are aware of, we're almost aware of what we don't know. Also, we're aware of, like, how do you know that your way or your truth that you've decided to stay in is correct at all?
Yeah.
And it's, I guess, you know that something's correct if it rings true within you
Yeah.
know, at that in that moment.
That made me think, that reminded me of, I hope I haven't told this story already before, but when I was exploring different religions, I went to a Catholic church and I spoke with the priest, and I wanted to learn, like, what really is the Holy Trinity. Have I shared this story before?
I don't think so.
And the Trinity, the concept of that, and he was pulling out these candles and trying to, he lit these three candles. He was like trying to explain it to me. And it felt kind of like a struggle. And then he like gave me this giant thick book. He's like, take this home and read this. And I went there to that church a few times to experience whatever their services were like and stuff. And I got holy water thrown at me. It got in my eyes. That was really interesting. But anyways, that's off the topic. But I said to him that, you know, forgive me if I'm questioning too much, like these things, these concepts, you know, that you believe so deeply in. I'm just trying to figure it out. And then he said that those who question are among the wise. And that was my last conversation with him. I
Why was that your last conversation?
don't know. I felt like I kind of got what I wanted in that experience. And he kind of was so open to talking to me, and then he validated and acknowledged, he validated that need in me for just questioning, because I was kind of going through this spiritual journey and trying to figure out who am I spiritually. And so that helped, that validated that it's okay to question, and it's okay from a priest, you know, I got the okay that I should be questioning absolutely everything. And I think you and I have, going back to the point, is that I think we've always been that way,
Yeah.
I guess.
Did you read the giant book that he gave you? Any of it?
I tried to read some, but it was so complicated, and that's kind of what turned me off to Catholicism, because if you need a giant book on how to be a Catholic, I'm turned off, because I like books and I like reading about things, but it was like a these rules and guidelines to the religion. And it was just overwhelming. That was overwhelming.
Yeah. I think it's all can be overwhelming. That's why people feel like they need to go to church, or they need someone else to kind of interpret something for them in a way, right? Instead of finding it for themselves and
Yeah.
exploring it themselves, they need some type of guidance, which I guess can be helpful, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, you have to find what God is. You know, ultimately you have to find spirituality. You have to find who God is, and what that means. And I don't think that any of us have ever found that,
Yeah.
and we won't ever find it, because that's the nature of this filter, right? And we've probably said it here on this show before, what we believe God is, right? I can speak for myself and say I believe that God is experiencing a human, he's God is having a human experience in each one of our bodies. You know, every body, every person is just the flesh. It's like a flesh body that God is like living through. You know, God is having an experience in that person. That flesh is the filter, no matter who it is, no matter how ridiculous the person is, how intelligent or not intelligent or evil, you know, how brutal they may be, or how charitable and merciful they may be. You know, how I think that it's still God within that person. That's probably not a, you know, it's not that I don't think that view really lines up with Christianity so well, or other certain spiritual traditions. But that's what I've gathered from the teachings of Jesus, and I think that's what Jesus was saying. He's basically like, I'm God is living through me, you know, and through each one of you as well. Like I'm pretty sure Jesus said that, but we're getting off of the off of this Buddhist thing here. We
Yeah,
go,
but that's
but that's what it's about. We're kind of approaching this Buddhist teaching about spiritual materialism through the eyes, you know, through the filter of what we were raised with Christianity and how we understand these things. The introduction goes on to say, in the Buddhist tradition, the analogy of the sun appearing from behind the clouds is often used to explain the discovery of enlightenment. In meditation practice, we clear away the confusion of ego in order to glimpse the awakened state. The absence of ignorance, of being crowded in, of paranoia, opens up a tremendous view of life. One discovers a different way of being. The heart of confusion is that man has a sense of self which seems to him to be a con be continuous and solid. When a thought or emotion or event occurs, there is a sense of someone being conscious of what is happening. That's what we're just ta what I believe is whoever is conscious, that's kind of observing this, we have that sense, right? A self that is a sense of someone being conscious of what is happening. You sense that you are reading these words, right? This sense of self is actually a transitory, discontinuous event, which in our confusion seems to be quite solid and continuous. I could just keep going on and on, but what do you think about all that?
I like this discussion of the ego and how that can really directly relate to your spirituality, or
Maybe that thing that I think God is, maybe that's the ego telling me
maybe
that, right?
yeah, maybe, but I don't think it should be so difficult for people who believe in God to understand your viewpoint of an art, because I believe that too. And because the thought of God is like he's watching all things, he knows all things, right? Like,
Yeah.
so how so is he? So he's above us staring down? No,
Right.
he's in us because he can hear our thoughts, supposedly.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me that he would be outside of us. You know, and I feel like the ego, that might be one of the lies of the ego, is that God is outside of us, and you know what I mean? Like, this, let's see, this goes on to say, ego, however, is only partially successful in shielding us from pain. It is the dissatisfaction which accompanies ego's struggle that inspires us to examine what we are doing. Since there are always gaps in our self-consciousness, some insight is possible. Let's see if I can find something else interesting in this. Ego is able to convert everything to its own use, even spirituality. For example, if you have learned of a particularly beneficial meditation technique of spiritual practice, then ego's attitude is first to regard it as an object of fascination, and second to examine it. Finally, since ego is seeming solid and cannot really absorb anything, it can only mimic. Thus, ego tries to examine and imitate the practice of meditation and the meditative way of life. When we have learned all the tricks and answers of the spiritual game, we automatically try to imitate spirituality, since real involvement would require the complete elimination of ego. And actually, the last thing we want to do is to give up the ego completely. However, we cannot experience that which we are trying to imitate. We can only find some area within the bounds of ego that seems to be the same thing. Ego translates everything in terms of its own state of health, its own inherent qualities. It feels a sense of great accomplishment and excitement at having been able to create such a pattern. At last, it has created a tangible accomplishment, a confirmation of its own individuality. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of thrown off by that.
Yeah, it's almost like the ego is completely separate, right, from spirituality, and it imitates spirituality. So it's the ego is imitating spirituality, and it's not the real thing. It's not the real awakened self or the awakened mind.
Yeah. Is that saying, like, let's try to think of a tangible example to where we're not being rude or putting down somebody else, but trying to think how that, what you just read, how that can relate to some, how we can give an example in real life.
I don't know. There's probably some examples in here that we could find, right?
Yeah.
What would be an example of that?
Ken, like, basically telling your child that your child is a Christian. Like, if you say, you know, this child who's not been in this world that long and doesn't necessarily understand the concept of God.
Right.
Yet the parents tell that child, we are Christians, or we are whatever.
Yeah, you know, Muslims or Jews or Buddhists. Yeah. Like, we are this thing.
We are this. Is that kind of a, would that be an example of that?
Yeah. And it, that would come from the ego too, because it's, you know, as parents, you fear that your child won't grow up with your same values and your same morals, right? So there's that fear and that paranoia that this talks about, spiritual materialism.
Yeah.
That you've kind of put this expectation on this being, this new child, this new life form, right? This new person that has no idea what any of that stuff means.
Yeah.
You know, and that's your ego doing that, right? That your ego is placing that upon that child. And so that's going to imprint on the child's ego. And then the child's ego is going to imitate that as well, right?
Yeah.
So this is scary to me. How do we get through this? I'm going to keep reading. If we become successful at maintaining our self-consciousness through spiritual techniques, then genuine spiritual development is highly unlikely. Our mental habits become so strong as to be hard to penetrate. We may even go so far as to achieve the totally demonic state of complete egohood.
Whoa.
Complete egohood. I think everyone else is living in egohood and I'm not. I'm the one that understands it and is truly enlightened, right?
Yes.
Even though the Lord of Mind is the most powerful in subverting spirituality, still, the other two lords can also rule the spiritual practice. Retreat to nature, isolation, simple, quiet, high people, all can be ways of shielding oneself from irritation. All can be expressions of the Lord of Form. Or perhaps religion may provide us with a rationalization for creating a secure nest. A simple but comfortable home for acquiring an amiable mate and a stable, easy job. So I skipped a little bit forward. They're talking about these different aspects of the mind, I think. The Lord of Speech, the Lord of Form, and the Lord of Mind. Skip ahead a little bit here. And I'd recommend anybody listening to this try to find this book, pick up a copy of this book and read it. And it took me a long time to read this book. I found it difficult at times to get through, but I eventually got through it, and I really don't remember much of it. But and that's why we're gonna go
Read
over it
through it
again
again, yeah.
and document the process so that we can share it with everyone. Let's see here. This is talking about those three aspects, right? The three Lords. The Lord's defenses are created out of the material of our minds. This material of mind is used by the Lords in such a way as to maintain the basic myth of solidity. In order to see for ourselves how this process works, we must examine our own experience. But how, we might ask, are we to conduct this examination? What method or tool are we to use? The method that the Buddha discovered is meditation. He discovered that struggling to find answers did not work. It was only when there were gaps in his struggle that insights came to him. He began to realize that there was a sane, awake quality within him, which manifested itself only in the absence of struggle. So the practice of meditation involves letting be. So it's one of those things that can only be found by not looking, right?
Yes. Wow. I don't know. This is like very interesting. I kind of would want to go back to the three lords.
Like what that means?
Yeah. Those are like three lords within, right?
Yeah. See if I can find the beginning of this. I thought I read this, maybe I skipped over. An interesting metaphor used in Tibetan Buddhism to describe the functioning of ego is that of the three lords of materialism: the lord of form, the lord of speech, and the lord of mind. In the discussion of the three lords which follows, the words materialism and neurotic refer to the action of ego. The lord of form refers to the neurotic pursuit of physical comfort, security, and pleasure. All right, I'll skip forward. That's easy to understand, right? The
Yeah.
lord of form. We're seeking physical, material things to make us comfortable, right? And to feel secure. The Lord of Speech refers to the use of intellect in relating to our world. We adopt sets of categories which serve as handles, as ways of managing phenomena. The most fully developed products of this tendency are ideologies, the systems of ideas that rationalize, justify, and sanctify our lives. This is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Nationalism, communism, existentialism, Christianity, Buddhism, all provide us with identities, rules of action, and interpretations of how and why things happen as they do. So that would be a part of the Lord of Speech. We can skip forward to the Lord of Mind refers to the effort of consciousness to maintain awareness of itself. The Lord of Mind rules when we use spiritual and psychological disciplines as the means of maintaining our self-consciousness, of holding on to our sense of self. Drugs, yoga, prayer, meditation, trances, various psychotherapies all can be used in this way. Ego is able to convert everything to its own use, even spirituality. So
Yeah,
that's crazy.
that's cool.
So you could be practicing spiritual materialism. Beware.
Yes.
In your yoga practice, in your meditation, in your reading of the Bible, in your whatever you've chosen. I'm practicing spiritual materialism right now by reading Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. There's no way out. We're trapped in the ego.
Yes.
Right?
That's interesting.
So let's see, we almost made it to the end of the introduction here. I've been skipping around all over the place. Let's see. If the strategy of continually creating overlapping thoughts is penetrated, when the Lord stir up emotions, Oh, then the Lord stir up emotions to distract us. The exciting, colorful, dramatic quality of the emotions captures our attention as if we were watching an absorbing film show. In the practice of meditation, we neither encourage emotions nor repress them. By seeing them clearly, by allowing them to be as they are, we no longer permit them to serve as a means of entertaining and distracting us. Thus, they become the inexhaustible energy which fulfills egoless action. So, that's one of the things, you know, I think one of the misconceptions about meditation, people think that it's like you're clearing your mind. But you're not trying to clear your mind. You're just sitting and breathing and letting be, right? Letting what, it's mindfulness, right? You're being mindful of the thoughts and you're letting them come and you're letting them go. And you're not like holding on to them. You're not trying to force them away, right? You're just existing in those, in that moment. The sounds around you, you're not trying to drown anything out. Like a lot of people do guided meditations. It's not really a meditation. You have somebody speaking in your ear, counting for you, telling you how to breathe. That's
more hypnosis than meditation.
Yeah, I think so.
And that kind of goes against what you're saying, the purpose of meditation, which is what we do in our lives every day, is we try to find distractions so that we don't have to think about the things that worry us or, you know, focus on any one emotion too much. So if you're meditating, you've got to just face all of that.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
And so if you have a guided one, you're not facing all that.
You're not listening to the voice, the thing that's telling you that you suck and that you, you know, you're like something's wrong with you. And those are almost like surface level voices, and there's a level above that or beneath that, however you look at it, where you're not going to hear that. You'll hear a different voice maybe, or you'll hear nothing, or you know, but you have to face that, the things that your mind is saying, you know, you have to face the things that you're thinking, and you face that, and then you're able to, you're not suppressing it anymore. You're letting it be. And then it dissipates, right? And the source of the suffering is found.
Yeah.
And then the suffering ends.
Just, I like that.
Oh, thank you. The suffering ends just like this episode is about to. Well, we got through the introduction. Actually, I'll read a little bit more. There's a little bit more here. I'll skip to the final paragraph of the introduction here. By the examination of his own thoughts, emotions, concepts, and the other activities of the mind, the Buddha discovered that there is no need to struggle to prove our existence, that we need not to be subject to the rule of the three lords of materialism. There is no need to struggle to be free. The absence of struggle is in itself freedom. This egoless state is the attainment of Buddhahood, the process of transforming the material of mind from expressions of ego's ambitions into expressions of basic sanity and enlightenment through the practice of meditation. This might be said to be the true spiritual path. And on that, we shall end. Do you have any final words for our dear, dear listeners?
Thank you for listening, and I really look forward to exploring this with all of you.
Yes, maybe we'll return to this book, right?
Yes.
We'll come back and maybe we'll do an episode on each chapter or something like that, right?
Yeah, I would love that.
Cool. Well, until next time, thank you for listening, and thank you for being kind to yourself, learning to love yourself, and learning to radically accept yourself and who you are.
Yes, I love that.
All right. Talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. We really appreciate you joining us today, and we hope that you join us again in the future. Why don't you do us a favor? Help us out. subscribe to the show from wherever you're listening to it at. We would greatly appreciate that. And we look forward to hanging out with you again on that which cannot be destroyed. Thank you.